গোপী জনবালবাঙ্গিরি ফরদারি যশোদানন্দনা জনরঞ্জন যমুনা নমো ভগবতে বাসুদেবায়া, ও নমো ভগবতে বাসুদেবায়া, ও নমো ভগবতে বাসুদেবায়া।
Hare Krishna. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 29. Actually, reading from text number 18 and 20. This verse was done yesterday. So since it's three texts together, and it's a kind of a long purport, I'm just going to read that, because otherwise so much time will be taken out. So I'll just recite the Sanskrit translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Deho ratastorindya swa samvatsara ryo giti dvi karma chakrastri guna tajo pancha subandhuraha manorashmir buddhi suto rinido dhvandva kubharaha pachindri artha prekshepa sapta dhatu varutakaha akutir vikramo bhayo mrigatrishnam pradhavati ekaldashindriya chamu panchasuna vinodakrit.
Should I do the word for word meaning? No? Yes? No? You can guess.
Deha, body, rata, chariot, tu, but, indriya, the knowledge acquiring senses. Ashwa, the horses, samvatsara, total years, rayaha, duration of life, agati, without advancing, dvi, two, karma, activities, chakra, wills, three, guna, modes of nature, dvaja, flags, pancha, five, asu, life heirs, banduraha, bondage, manaha, the mind, rashmi, rope, budhi, intelligence, suta, chariot driver, hrit, heart, nidha, sitting place, dvandva, duality, kubaraha, the post for the harness, pancha, five, indriya artha, sense objects,
Prakshapa, weapons. Sapta, seven. Dhatu, elements. Varuntakaha, coverings. Akuti, attempts of the five working senses. Vikrama, prowess or processes. Bahya, external. Mirgatrishnam, false aspiration. Pradhavati, runs after. Ekadasha, 11. Indriya, senses. Chamu, soldiers. Pancha, 5. Suna, envy. Vinoda, pleasure. Krit, doing. Whew, that was exhausting. Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada. Narada Muni continued. This is a very familiar analogy. What I refer to as a chariot was in actuality the body. The senses are the horses that pull the chariot. As time passes year after year, these horses run without obstruction, but in fact they make no progress. Pious and impious activities are the two wheels of the chariot. The three modes of material nature are the chariot's flags. The five types of life air constitute the living entity's bondage, and the mind is considered to be the rope. Intelligence is a chariot driver, the heart is a sitting place in the chariot, and the dualities of life, such as pleasure and pain, are the knotting place. The seven elements are the coverings of the chariot, and the working senses are the five external processes. The 11 senses are the soldiers. Being engrossed in sense enjoyment, the living entity seated on the chariot hankers after fulfillment of his false desires and runs after sense enjoyment life after life. Purport. The entanglement of the living entity in sense enjoyment is very nicely explained in these verses. The word samvatsara, meaning the progress of time, is significant. Day after day, week after week, fortnight after fortnight, month after month, year after year, the living entity becomes entangled in the chariot's progress. The chariot rests on two wheels, which are pious and impious activities. The living entity attains a certain position in life in a particular type of body according to his pious and impious activities. But his transmigration into different bodies should not be taken as progress. Real progress is explained in Bhagavad Gita 4:9, Taktwa deham punarjanma naiti. One makes real progress when he does not have to take on another material body. As stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 19, 138, Eite brahmanda bhari ananta jivagan, chorashi laksha yonite karaye brahman. The living entity is wandering throughout the entire universe and taking birth in different species on different planets. Thus he moves up and down, but that is not real progress. Real progress is getting out of this material world altogether. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, verse 16, A brahma bhuvana loka punar arvartunor juna mamu petitukonteya punar jamana vittite. Quote, from the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. But one who attains Sumaya Bodo, son of Kunti, never takes birth again. Even if one is promoted to Brahmaloka, the highest planet in the universe, he has to come down again to the lower planetary systems. Thus, he is wandering up and down perpetually under the influence of the three modes of material nature. Being an illusion, he thinks he is making progress. He is like an airplane encircling the earth day and night, incapable of leaving the earth's gravitational field. Factually, there is no progress because the airplane is conditioned by the earth's gravity. Just as a king is seated on the chariot, the living entity is seated in the body. The sitting place is the heart, and the living entity sits there and engages in the struggle for existence, which goes on without progress perpetually. In the words of Narottam Das Thakur, Kamrakanda, Gyanakanda, Kevala Visharabhanda Amrita Balaya Yebakai Nanayoni Sada Pire Kadharya Bhakshanakare Tara Janma Ada Patiyai. The living entity struggles very hard due to the influence of fruit of activity and mental speculation, and simply gets a different type of body life after life. He eats all kinds of nonsense and is condemned by his activities of sense enjoyment. If one really wants to progress in life, he must give up the ways of karmakanda and gyanakanda, fruit of activities and mental speculation. Being fixed in Krishna consciousness, one can become freed from the entanglement of birth and death and the vain struggle for existence. And these verses, the words mrigatrishnam pradhavati, are very significant because the living entity is influenced by a thirst for sense enjoyment. He is like a deer that goes to the desert to search out water. In a desert, an animal simply searches in vain for water. Of course, there is no water in the desert, and the animal simply sacrifices his life in an attempt to find it. Everyone is planning for future happiness, thinking that somehow or other, if he can reach a certain point, he will be happy. In actuality, however, when he comes to that point, he sees that there is no happiness. He then plans to go further and further to another point. This is called mrigatrishna, and its basis is sense enjoyment in the material world. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om agyanat mirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshrum litamina tasmai shri guruve namaha. Shri chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupakadamayam dadati swapadantikam. Vanchakaputurubhyascha kripasindubhyarevacha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Srivastari Gaura Bhaktivrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Good idea. Hare Krishna. So we've been hearing about, let me say the starting point. The soul is different from the material body. This is the basic platform of spiritual life and spiritual understanding. Without that, there is no question of discussion of philosophy, of spirituality, without this understanding. So the soul is different from the body. So what we're hearing about in this section is an explanation of the analogy which Narada Muni, he's one great sage, which he's giving to one king to explain how the soul is trying to enjoy in this body. He's trying to enjoy in the material world in his material body. That's what's being described here. And Narada Muni is trying to help us to understand how our attempt to enjoy inside this material body is very entangling and ultimately insubstantial and unhappy. So the thing that we're looking for by enjoyment in this material body pushes us further away from that thing that we're looking for. And this is the irony of material life. The thing that we think will make us happy pushes us further away from the happiness. This is the irony of material life. So this is being described in detail by Srila Narada Muni. He's a great sage and spiritual master in the parampara coming from Lord Brahma. This is a succession coming from Lord Brahma. So this is a very familiar analogy describing how the living entity is trying to enjoy. That's a few extra things there, but a very familiar analogy. The material body is compared to a chariot, and just as one will sit in the chariot, so the soul is sitting inside the material body, and the sitting place is the, Prabhupada says here, the heart, also mentioned sometimes as the region of the heart, because someone's going to ask the question, well, what happens when you do heart surgery? So it's mentioned actually as the region of the heart, the soul is sitting, and from that place, the soul pervades the whole body as consciousness. In the same way, if you take one drop of, what do they call it, potassium cyanide. Even if you take the tiniest drop of potassium cyanide, it affects the whole body in the form of death. You will die. So in the same way, the soul, even though in one location, is spread throughout the entire body as consciousness. In the same way that the sun, this is an analogy given in Gita also, the sun is in one place, but it spreads its influence throughout the whole universe as the sunshine. In the same way, the soul is in one place, in the region of the heart, and it's spreading its influence throughout the whole body as consciousness. So then, this body has, the chariot has horses. And I always like to add the extra thing, like Mustang horses. That's my little add-on. Because I don't know if you've ever seen like these cowboy movies. And the Mustang horses are the ones that are like really hard to control. So they have these, I don't know what they call them, these cowboy events. And then whoever can stay on the horse longer, you know, you get more money like that. So these horses are like that, Mustang horses, very wild horses, very difficult to control. So the senses are compared to these Mustang horses, very difficult to control. We have experience with trying to control, well, maybe many of us may not always be trying to control the senses. But when you try to control the senses, then you can realize how difficult it is to control the senses. So the senses are always pulling us toward the sense objects. Naturally also. We say it's natural. The eyes want to see some beautiful form. The ears want to hear some sweet sound. Beautiful form means the form of the opposite sex. Sweet sound means the sound, the voice of the opposite sex. That's the essence of it. Pum sastriya mean tuni baba me tam. And it has these expansions, but if you want to boil it down to the essence, you know, you want the cream, that is the cream of it. The form is usually the attraction for the opposite sex, the sound vibration of the opposite sex, the wanting to touch the opposite sex, like this smell. And they've made it even a very difficult thing. Actually, by the natural smell of the body, you can become self-realized. By the natural smell, you become completely detached from the body. But now especially in America, they're very expert in covering up the reality. So there's so many, if you go to the store, there's so many deodorants. You don't know which one to choose from. Old Spice or, I don't even know the varieties now. Old Spice, and I think it was Axe Effect was really popular before I joined the temple. And now so many varieties. And breath fresheners and gum. All these things are there to hide the reality of the body. Actually, just by the natural smell, one can become fully self-realized about the situation of the body. Actually, it's a fact. But they're creating so many things to hide the reality so that we become more and more entangled. So in this way, the senses, ear, eyes, these are knowledge-acquiring senses, tongue, tactile sense, skin, they're trying to contact the sense objects. And due to being illusioned by already written illusion, and modern society is expanding the influence of the illusion. We're always chasing after the sense objects. And our senses, we cannot control ourselves also. Just like if you have a favorite preparation is there, let's say, what's the favorite? Pizza, huh? Matzah paneer. If you're Indian, matzah paneer. And if you're Western, pizza. Like that. Then if I put that favorite preparation in front of you, and said, I'll be back in 1 hour, don't touch it. And then I leave. Well, what will you do? Anyway, if it's matzo paneer, you say, I'll take one cup, he won't even know the difference. Huh? Like that. It's very hard to control the senses. This is the idea. The senses are so putting so much pressure on the living entity that he finds it very difficult to control his senses. So it's being described here that these Mustang horses, they're running without obstruction, just running towards the sense objects. And they're running very fast, but they don't make any progress. If you imagine a chariot that's being led by Mustang horses, and it's going super fast, if you were to see that chariot, you would think, oh, they have somewhere to go, very important. You may think like that. But if the driver wasn't there and the Mustang horses were just let free to run, if we were to see it, we'd think, oh, something is happening, something very important is happening. But actually, nothing is happening. In fact, the horses are leading the driver towards destruction. So if the intelligence is not able, the driver is not able to control the horses, then suppose you're sitting in that chariot. Will you be very comfortable? You'll be very afraid. Maybe if you give a modern example. It's like if you're in a taxi. You're the passenger in a taxi. And the taxi driver just falls asleep at the wheel. You would feel very happy about that situation? You feel very uncomfortable about that situation? Oh, he must be very tired. No, you would feel afraid. So in the same way, when the intelligence is compared to the driver of this chariot, when the intelligence is asleep, then these senses are allowed to run without obstruction towards their sense objects. And it may look like it's progress, but actually no progress at all is being made. Actually, what is happening is the degradation of the living entity progressively. So this is the modern situation is very much like that. It looks like so much progress is being made. I mean, we didn't have Facebook before. Now we have Facebook. So much progress is there. We have cameras, iPad, and MP3 players. Now I can hear throughout the day. Shoving them. They said we should hear 24 hours a day. Now I can hear 24 hours a day. What we're hearing, we don't know. Because you keep it inside, no one knows what you're hearing. But 24 hours a day I can hear. And in this way, people mistake the comforts for the senses to be advancement in life. Actually, in order to discuss advancement intelligently with intelligent people, you have to identify what is the goal. Otherwise, you cannot intelligently talk about advancement. If you don't know where you're going, how do you talk about advancement? We're advancing toward what? You have to at least establish some location. Otherwise, some destination. Otherwise, you cannot intelligently talk about it. In the modern world, one's own opinion is highly valued. You should have your own opinion. We often joke about this in terms of when we went to English class. In English class, everyone was allotted their own opinion. You know, the teacher would also ask, what do you think about this? And we would speculate something. And then she said, very good. And what do you think about it? And then the next person, he would speculate something that is also very good. Even if those two were contradicting, she would say both were very good. And that was called English education. That was our education. So in this way, if you ask people, what is the goal of life? What is the purpose of life? And the modern civilization, they say it is according to the individual. Whatever he wants his purpose to be, that is his purpose. You cannot put an absolute purpose on purpose. You cannot say that it's absolute. It is according to whatever you want the purpose to be. Okay, fine. Even if you say that, then how do you intelligently talk about advancement without establishing what is the goal for everyone or for the living entities? So there's a modern situation. So they've actually said that there's no purpose to life by this type of relative idea of purpose. And then naturally they assume that if there's an increase in comforts for the senses, then we are making advancement in society. So now before we didn't have air conditioning, now we have air conditioning. Before we didn't have hospitals, but now we have hospitals, therefore we're advancing. Even though Ed and Avella were sharing with me that 50% of diseases are contracted in the hospital itself because it's so contaminating in place. I didn't know that. Apparently some statistic is there. But everyone will say, no, this is a very good thing. We're making advancement, we're advancing. This is just due to not being very thoughtful and being misled by the senses. Therefore, in Vedic culture, to be guided was always a very important principle. Because anyway, we're always being guided. Nowadays, I hear this from our youth many times. They say like this, that many will tell them, you should not be influenced by anyone. You should, you know, think for yourself, come up with your own opinion. Don't allow others to influence you. This is a very popular notion. But the very reality is that we're always being guided. If we're not guided by a superior authority, like a spiritual master or a saintly person, by Krishna in the form of the Bhagavad Gita, then our senses will guide us toward the sense objects very naturally. We're always being guided. Who told the young boy to go speak to the young girl? Did anyone tell to do that? Who told? The senses and mind told. Someone told. It's not that the living creature is going and doing. He is actually being guided to do so. He's being guided by the enemies, called the mind and the senses. They're working together. It's not that he's not being told. He is being told. He's being instructed by his mind and senses. So the senses see, oh, beautiful girl is there. She doesn't have any shelter. She is shelterless. Perhaps she is needing some shelter. And then the mind will start speculating so many things after that. Because the mind is compared to the ropes. So if the intelligence is asleep, then the senses will pull the ropes in whichever direction. So the senses are pulling the mind towards very colorful speculations. Very colorful. Oh, she is without any shelter. She is needing some shelter. The mind starts creating, well, I don't have a job. So then he starts speculating so many things from there. You know, okay, if I have to give her shelter, then I have to get a job. If I need a job, I need to go to school. Otherwise, you can't even become a janitor without a bachelor's degree. That is the modern situation is so severe that without a bachelor's degree, you cannot become a janitor also. So then he's thinking, oh, I need to get like this. So he's being guided. He's being guided by his mind and senses. It's giving him very expert guidance leading towards hell. Tamo dwaram yoshitam sanghi sangam. So then the recommendation is Mahat Sevam, Dwara Mahur Vimukti. The recommendation is you be guided by Mahats and render service to them so that the doors of liberation will be wide open. But then we're all advised, no, don't allow yourself to be influenced by others. You should be able to think for yourself. So we reject the guidance of saintly persons, and we follow the direction of our mind and senses, and we're led to catastrophe. Because the Mustangs have no direction. They're just running. That would be a very scary situation. You can only imagine. We don't have experience. So it's a very dangerous situation. So then it is also being described here how the two wheels on the chariot are pious and impious activities. They're compared to the two wheels. So the living entity in this material world is either doing pious activities. Pious activities refers to something like digging wells. See, these are not very good modern examples. Something like feeding people, clothing people, doing good works. Of course, it really refers to following Vedic injunctions for material enjoyment. That's called pious activity. And then sinful activity is what goes on today. I do what I want, when I want, how I want, like I want. That's called as sinful activity. So in the material world, the living entity is always doing both types of activities. He cannot stay fixed in one type of activity because the flags, which are compared to the three modes of material nature, do not allow him to stay fixed in one situation. He's being controlled. It is just like being pulled by a chain. Someone is pulling you by a chain, then you cannot, and you're completely bound up, then you are forced to move in the direction that the person is pulling you. So the modes of nature are like that. Mode of goodness is like a golden chain. Mode of passion is like a, what is silver? A silver chain. And mode of ignorance is like an iron chain. But all are chains only, and they're pulling us. Sometimes this chain is pulling stronger, sometimes that chain is pulling stronger. Krishna describes that in the Bhagavad Gita. There's always competition amongst the modes. So we cannot be fixed in pious or impious activities. That's impossible. One can be pious for so one may very much cherish and appreciate the quality of piety in the material world. But ultimately, that piety is not substantial because it cannot last. Being situated in the mode of goodness in the material world in comparison to the other modes of nature, without gaining spiritual life, without gaining transcendence, is something like, this analogy is given in the Bhagavatam, in the commentary, it is something like going to the airport without getting on the plane. Suppose you go through all the trouble to go to O'Hare Airport. You buy ticket also, you bring your bags also, everything, all the trouble you go through, and then you don't get on the plane. Then how is your situation any different from those who didn't even bother to go to the airport? Both are grounded. You are on the ground, they're also on the ground, and the plane is leaving. So this comparison is given in the Bhagavatam, that if one is in the mode of goodness, but he does not attain actual Krishna consciousness, he does not attain Krishna, does not surrender to the Lord, he does not become Krishna conscious, then his mode of goodness is just like going to the airport without getting on the airplane. And his situation is not different from those who didn't bother to go to the airport, because both have to suffer from birth and death. Both have to suffer from threefold miseries. Who is there in this material world who can say they can protect themselves from threefold miseries? There is not even a single person. So the living entity is speculating that if I go to this position, I'll be nice, I'll be happier. There'll be so much facility for enjoyment. He's thinking like that. But after getting there, he is again forced to come down. So his situation, this comparison is given in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It is something like with kings. The way kings used to punish people is that they would dump them under the water. This is a form of torture. We dump them under the water, and then just when they're about to die, you pull them up. They said, bliss, ananda. And then for some time he enjoys his ananda, 1-2 seconds, and then again they dump him underneath the water. Again, just when he's about to die, they pull him out. So this is the situation that's going on in the material world. We're struggling very hard for some happiness, and then sometimes we're coming up and we're feeling, I am very happy, I am very nicely situated. And then death comes, and according to your karma, you're getting a certain type of body, and then again down. So we're constantly rising and falling in the ocean of material life. And it's just a mental speculation that I'm better situated than others. If you were to go downtown Chicago and distribute books, you meet many of these, like, yuppies. If you go by Chicago and Michigan, you meet, like, the rich people, the yuppies. A Shari Prabhu was sharing with us that one lady, he went to distribute a book to one lady, and she said, "Oh, you people, this is why I don't like to come to this area, because you're always out here begging." You know, she was just kind of, like, got annoyed. And she gave him, like, $5, like, So she is thinking I don't have to die. She is thinking I am free from the reality of this material world. And therefore, speculating, I am better situated than you. I think Prabhupada gives an example of Titanic also. So they were in the Titanic, those on the top level were like the rich people, the yuppies and so on, and all the poor people, they were on the bottom. So when the Titanic was crashing, drowning, then what? I am better than you. But both are going to die. I often think this when I'm getting on the airplane and I see the first class seat. You know, the first class, you know, the big seat is there. Very nice. Looks very comfortable. And the rest of us are packed in like roaches or something in the back. Especially depending on where, if you're like Air India, you're like, it's like slavery or something like that. And then I often think, because when I get on planes, I get really nervous. Because I mean, this is a very dangerous thing. The reality they create on the plane makes it seem like everything is perfectly okay. Give them a lot of food, constantly eating. The plane culture means eating, sleeping, and watching movies. No mating. Yeah, at least I don't think so. Eating, sleeping, and watching movies. That's called plane culture. And this whole culture creates a situation that everything is very nice, but it's actually a very dangerous situation. Any moment there can be, the birds can get caught inside the engine, and then everything finished. But the person in first class, I'm thinking, I am very secure. But if the plane were to crash, I was just joking, that just means you'll die first. Or you'll die in a first class way. But you're going to die, just like the rest of us. So this is the material situation. Everyone is going to die. So Krishna is warning us in the material world. From the topmost planet down to the lowest planet, all are places of misery. Why? Because you have to die in that place. Any place where you have to die, you cannot say it's a very joyful place. Actually, if you are aware of that reality, you cannot enjoy also. Bhagavatam gives an example. It is just like a man who gets a last supper right before he's condemned to death. Sometimes they have this culture, I think they have it also here in America, when a person's on the death row, and the day he's going to be electrocuted, they give him a last supper, just like the painting, the last supper. And all wonderful preparations can be given. All whatever you like to eat will be given to you. Well, can you enjoy that preparation, the last supper? I mean, even the name, the last supper, is very ominous. How do you say? Ominous? Ominous. The Last Supper. Everybody will be completely miserable. You're not enjoying. It's not possible. Because you know, as soon as you shall finish the last bite, okay, come with me now. And you sit down in the chair, they electrocute you. Finish. So the Bhagavatam says, similarly, for those who will be aware of the reality that you have the guillotine of death always swinging over your neck, then how can you enjoy in this world? You cannot enjoy. It is not at all possible. So in the material world, there has to be an illusion has to be created. Otherwise, the divinity will never pursue it. Suppose there's a nice plate of prasadam, and right over the plate of prasadam, this huge guillotine is swinging, and they say, "Here, please have your seat here, sir." You will not pursue it. So in the same way, in order for us to pursue happiness in the material world, an illusion has to be created that there is no death. That has to be created. So Maya creates that illusion that you will live forever. And you are enjoying so nicely, and in the future you'll enjoy more and more and more. And that way we can confidently pursue material sense gratification. Otherwise you cannot pursue. And then, of course, in the modern society, they've expanded it even more by making it look so much glitter, making it look so fancy. So Krishna warns us, if we have first-class intelligence, that don't worry about... I always quote this verse for no sightseeing in the material world. Sometimes people come to our temple And because Chicago is famous for some various landmarks, they asked to, oh, can you take me to see Sears Tower? Take me downtown Chicago. I want to see downtown. So when devotees have asked me this on a couple of occasions, I say, Krishna recommends no sightseeing. Where Krishna recommends no sightseeing. Then I quote this, Brahma Bhuvana Loka, Puna, from the topmost planet down to the lowest, all our places are misery. So nothing to see. There's absolutely nothing to see. But that's only for the first class intelligent persons. So if we're not first class intelligent, then we might have to go and see downtown and see Sears Tower, because our intelligence is dull. We're not able to understand this situation. So real progress, Srila Prabhupada is saying here, real progress. I'm not explaining all the details if you want to ask, because it would take a long time to go through all the details. I want to get to one particular point Prabhupada is making. Real progress means getting free from material life altogether, and then free from the material world. This is called real progress. That's the way that is defined, at least, by Vaishnavas. The material life entails, in the Sanskrit, Prabhupada is quoting here, entails Mriga Trishna Pradhavati, which means happiness is always in the next step. Happiness is never in the step that you're taking. One struggles very, very hard to get to a certain position, only to realize that that position isn't exactly where it's at. It's actually in the next step. So then he continues to go, and then he gets that thing also. Oh, actually, happiness isn't here. It's actually just in front of me. I'm almost getting it. Mriga Trishna Rupa. There's another verse that reminds me of from Prahlad Maharaj's prayers that you've heard me quote often. Kuta Shusha Shruti Sukha Mriga Trishna Rupa. Kvedam Kalevaram Ashesh Rujaviroha. So this verse, anyway, I'm not going to quote the whole thing. It's mentioned there. Kuta Ashisha. Where is there happiness in the material world? Prahlad Maharaj is posing a question. It's kind of like a rhetorical question. Where is there happiness in the material world? He's asking, where is it? Where is the happiness in the material world? Then he says, Shruti Sukha, simply in hearing about it. Shruti Sukha. Sukha means the happiness. Sukha is in the Shruta, is in the hearing. It's not in the actual experience. And when you hear about the happiness, then we make some mental concoction in the mind and we think, oh. Many times we speculate, you call it daydreaming. We think, oh, for example, when the boy thinks, I'll get the girl, I'll use this word, all these things, then he becomes very blissful. But the experience is all in the head. It's not actually anything practical. Similarly, oh, I'll go to the party, there'll be so many girls there, I'll enjoy it nicely. But when he actually goes to the party, there are so many other drunks there, and they're also trying to go for the same girl, and he's completely miserable. So the actual experience of material life is miserable. But the concocted idea that you get from the hearing is that it will be very nice. So Prahlad Maharaj is, where is there happiness in the material world? It's simply in hearing about it. And then the image that you see in your mind. Mriga Trishna Rupa, he said, it's just like a deer chasing a mirage in the desert. So the deer chasing a mirage in the desert always thinks the happiness is, he's just about to get it. I'm so close. I'm getting really close. And then he wanders deep into the desert, so there's no question of turning back, and then the mirage disappears, and no water at all, and he dies. So this is what's happening in the material world. Maya sukaya bharamudarato vimudan. The living entity is carrying the burden of the idea that I'll be happy in this material world. So he's constantly chasing after it, even in his old age, chasing after sex life, all these things. And then, if he happens to live to be very old, then the mirage just disappears. And his whole life has actually been wasted. So there's another verse describing the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Maya mrigam dayitaya ipsitam anvadhavat. That Lord Chaitanya's the incarnation of God. Anvadhavat means he was always running after the conditioned souls who are maya mrigam. Maya mrigha means they are always running after the happiness that's always in the next step, and they're perishing. So Mahaprabhu was always running after such souls who were bewildered by Maya. That means all the conditioned souls like us who are having strong thirst for enjoyment in this material world, mrigha tishna, having strong thirst to enjoy this material world, and therefore, although in our experience, we have not gotten much enjoyment. In our experience, who can honestly say we've got much enjoyment? For the little enjoyment we get, there's so much suffering. Just like sex life, this is a primary thing. But if you want to do sex life, so much suffering is there. I mean, I don't know all the details of these things, but at least if kids come, how miserable it would be. Anyway, I don't know, but you can ask any parents, they'll tell you. Honestly, they're disturbed to sleep. At 11 o'clock, they want to come back home and disturbed to sleep. You cannot sleep properly. Of course, there are many other things that come with sex life. Now so many diseases are there. I think you were giving an argument. I thought it was a very nice argument. They call it making love, but love should not spread disease. They say making love, they call it like this and create a misconception of happiness. They call it making love. But it's creating so much disease. So in this way, there's so much suffering that we get. How much enjoyment you will get, 5-10 minutes of enjoyment you can enjoy, then so much suffering will come, unlimited suffering. Suppose you eat a lot of rasgulas. Rasgulas is a type of sweet. It tastes very nice. And usually because the tongue is quite hard to control, and suppose no one is around, then you will take 1, 2, 3. Suppose you will take 1 dozen rasgulas. Then you say, oh, this is very nice. You'll feel very ecstatic, very happy. But then in the middle of the night, great pain will be coming in the stomach. And then you have to run to the bathroom all throughout the night running. So you got your enjoyment. 5-10 minutes it took you to devour 12 rasgulas. But then the suffering throughout the night will be there. You cannot sleep also. So this is the nature of, just like the nature of fires to burn, this is the nature of the material world. So unfortunately, because especially in this age of Kali, our intelligence is not very sharp. So it is mentioned, Mayabhrishan Anvadhava. Lord Chaitanya was always running after such souls in order to protect them from their own foolishness. At the same time, he was also running after, it says, Daitaya, out of his mercy, he was running after such souls. And at the same time, he was also running after the object of his devotion, Krishna. So this is a very important point, I thought, just to highlight briefly, that primarily Lord Chaitanya appears to relish his devotion to God in the purview of the conditioned souls, so they can see that and become attracted to devotion to the Lord. That is his primary purpose for coming. And part of expression of that devotion to the Supreme Lord is running after the conditioned souls and giving them an opportunity to connect to that devotional experience. So many times, as representatives of Lord Chaitanya, we also have to run after the conditioned souls and try to bring them into the field of devotional service. At the same time, how much are we running after the object of our devotion as well? Kala Krishnadas was also running after the conditioned souls. Of course, for the purpose of enjoyment. It is there. He was with the Lord himself. He was with Lord Chaitanya himself. And then some gypsy women were there. And they were doing some nice dancing. Oh, very nice dancing. And then he left the association of Lord Chaitanya and ran after them. Mahaprabhu ran after Kala Krishnadas. And he ran to the camp of the gypsies. And he said, that is my servant. Please, can I have him back? So all the gypsies got up and ran after Lord Chaitanya to attack him. And then Lord Chaitanya made all the weapons come out of their hands, and it's described there that, you know, they were cut to pieces. Parama Karuna. Shoot Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then the rest of them were able to run away, those who didn't get cut to pieces. And then he brought his servant, Kala Krishnadas, back to order. So anyway, my point is that although we shall run after the conditioned souls in order to help them connect to the pure devotional experience, we have to make sure that we're also more profoundly internally running after our object of devotion, namely Krishna. Otherwise, the attempt to render some help for the society without actually gaining that devotional experience or at least wanting that devotional experience for yourself, you know, the desire to be guru becomes more prominent desire, then we'll be lost like Kala Krishnadas. So the living entity, we should see how much we are free from Rigratishna, the thirst for material enjoyment. Otherwise, in the name of running after the conditioned souls, Mrigamayam Anvadavad, we'll actually be getting ourselves entangled in the material existence. And there'd be no question of helping them.
At the same time, if we are actually having, then that quality should also be seen, that we are also rendering some help to the society to help them get free from their misconceptions of material sense enjoyment. So this is some points here that I could think of last minute. Does anyone want to say anything? Okay.
I was thinking about Krishna Smarnam when he was here. He said, I don't know, you might remember, he went to Paris, and he asked the temple president there if there was some service to do. And the temple president was kind of like, whoa, what's going on here? When they usually come to Paris, they want to see Notre Dame or the Eiffel Tower. And he asked Krishna Smarnam,
do you want
to see that? And he says, no, I just want to see the deities and serve in the temple. So I thought that was kind of related to what you had to say.
Yes. Okay. I've been coming to this temple for 3 weeks. I received nothing but love here. But I was just wondering. I'm third gender. I consider myself male and female, and I like to be addressed as female. How does this temple stand on that? I just need to know.
Well, the answer that I normally give for this question, the answer that I give for this type of question, is that foundationally, the soul, you're a soul, right? You've been understanding that from our topics. So we're a soul, we're not this material body. So our opinion about this gender or that gender, and thinking such things, we say all of it is actually ridiculous, because it's based on a misconception. Because you're not this body. You're actually a spiritual entity. So our opinion is not against or for, it's rather for Krishna. It's rather for Krishna. So in other words, our love for you that you said that you're experiencing here, the love that you're experiencing has nothing to do with your material situation of being this gender or that gender. Rather, it has to do with our attraction to you, the actual spiritual entity. If our love shall be if our love shall be based on your situation within this material body, then there may be discrimination shown. Oh, you are like this or like that. But because the love is not based on attraction to the body, but it's based on attraction to the soul, then it has no bearing on our, let's say, affection for you. Can you understand that? You can understand?
I understand your words, so what you're basically saying is that y'all don't care.
Yeah.
You're basically saying, I'm cool, y'all don't care.
Yeah, you're cool because you're a spirit soul. Now, to further elaborate upon that, now, we, as spiritual entities, we are trapped in the material world, right? You've been understanding that. So we want to get free from the material world also, isn't it?
Right.
We want to get free. So there are things that we do to help us gain freedom from the material world. So actually the temple is just direction. That means because you think the temple is over there, you'll be always looking over there, isn't it? You'll be misled. And then you'll never find the temple by a misconception of who we think we are. So then, for those who are serious about spiritual life, then they are also prepared to accept the activities for gaining freedom, which has nothing to do with our attractions and what's the other opposite of attraction? Repulsion for these things in the material world. So you'll find that we follow certain principles. Like, for example, one of our principles is no illicit sex, no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication.
And we follow that because that's conducive for freedom. That's conducive for freedom. So if we want to improve ourselves spiritually, then we will accept those things. Take medicine that sometimes tastes very bitter. Pill about this big. And it tastes so horrible, I just wanted to vomit after taking it. It tasted very bad. But because I spiritual progress, in the beginning, we may have to accept something that's very bitter, things that we'd like to do. But in the beginning, in the end, it will give us spiritual freedom.
One more question. Okay. You said no gambling. You also said no sex.
No, it's just sex.
Okay. Are you talking about like just having sex just for procreation purposes, or no sex at all?
Yeah, having sex for procreation purposes and also for training the children in Krishna consciousness.
Say that again.
Having sex only for the purpose of having children, and that too, having children for the purpose of training them in spiritual life.
Okay.
Not just having children like cats and dogs have children.
Tell me about it.
But having children for the purpose of training them in spiritual life, that is our principle.
Okay.
So outside of that, no sex. And believe it or not, that will make you happy. In fact, I think that was you when I gave the Bhagavad Gita discussion. You came to the Bhagavad Gita class, and I asked for an example of things that we think will make us happy but actually make us miserable. And I think it was you who told sex life.
Yes.
You gave that example.
Yes.
So that means you can understand that that is not going to make us happy. Those type of activities will not make us happy. So therefore, we give them up. No need.
Well, okay. It's like this. All through my life, I've had, having a grand old time, you know, and I see, and I'm looking at that, and they're happy.
Are they?
Yes.
That's what we see. Just like two things to this point. What you see is not always what you get. And you've heard this saying before, right? And let me put it like this. Have you ever had the experience of being miserable but not wanting anyone to know it? So when you come outside, you put on a facade so that no one would know how actually much you're hurting inside?
Yes.
You have that experience?
Yes.
So it's described in the material world, that's what most of us are doing. We're putting on a show because we don't want people to know how much we're hurting inside. This is the reality. So although, in other words, don't be fooled by the show. It's just like an actor who wears, it's just like a friend who's on stage doing a play. You know that he is not that character on stage. He's something else. In the same way, everyone is like putting on a show. And when you go to a show, like, I don't know if you've ever been to like a Broadway show or something like that.
I've never been to a Broadway show.
But like a play, right?
Yes.
So at the play, you get intrigued by the play. You think, oh, very nice play. But it has nothing to do with what's actually happening, the real thing. So this is like a play going on outside. And we easily get, oh, that looks very nice. But actually, the real situation is something else. Don't think they're having grand old time. It's a trick of the mind.
Well, it's been playing tricks on me for the past 32 years.
Yeah, well, for me, it's been the last 27 years. How long for you? So we've all been fooled by the material energy. So therefore Krishna is trying to warn us. Don't be fooled again. Don't be fooled because everyone is doing it. Suppose there's a piece of stool lying somewhere outside, and 300 flies are eating that. Will you also start to eat that?
No, I'm not flying.
Exactly. So in the same way, people are chasing after stool-like sense gratification. So even if so many people are doing it, doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. Just because there's more people doing it, doesn't mean it's the right thing to do.
You know, I'm just sick of feeling so lonely. You know, so
yeah, this is the primordial issue. Don't think that people who are having relationships outside don't feel lonely. The greatest, if you want a deep experience of intimacy, this is mentioned. If you want a deep experience of intimacy, then you should be prepared to render service to Krishna and to others then by rendering, by wanting to render service, you'll experience intimacy. But by wanting to take from others, to enjoy from them, to exploit them, then you experience suffering. Because try to understand this. It's with a cool head, Prabhupada says. Try to understand this. You have a man, let's say, who's looking at a woman, or whoever, the object of his sense enjoyment, and he wants to enjoy that woman or that man, whoever. And the other person also wants to enjoy that man or that woman. Is there intimacy there?
Yes.
How?
Because, you know, you said is there another man that wants to enjoy the woman, and the woman wants to enjoy the man.
But that is that not exploitation? I want to take from you. I don't want to give you anything. Is that nice? Suppose you have 10 money in your pocket. I just take it from you for myself so I can enjoy it. Will you be happy about that?
No. You're talking about two different things, because them two people want to enjoy each other's company and give each other pleasure.
No, that's not the case. They want to get pleasure for themselves. They want to take from the individual. And you know what the proof is? Here's one simple proof. Why the divorce rate is so high in America? Why is a person jumping from boyfriend to boyfriend to girlfriend to girlfriend every 2-3 weeks? If that's what they really wanted to do, is give pleasure, to love them selflessly, then why they're having so many boyfriends and girlfriends in 1 year? That means it's not based on love, it's based on exploitation. They want to exploit the person for their own enjoyment. Therefore, they're not experiencing intimacy. If it was such a wonderful, intimate experience, then why do they have to drop the person and get another person? And why is it so much pain inside? If it was such a wonderful thing. So these things are difficult to understand because we're attached to a misconception that we're having. Anyway, spiritual life is the process of gradually purifying ourselves of these things, progressively. Try to understand, though, Jesus didn't have any sex. He was... That's not the case. By chanting, you'll become a devotee. And by associating with devotees. You said that you want what we have, isn't it?
Yes, you know.
So there's a way to get it.
Okay.
No sex life and pure happiness. Seems contradictory, doesn't it? So there's a way to get it. It is a simple formula, and it's a formula that all of us have practiced and tried. Formula number one. And you can put forward your questions, especially at the prasadam time or something. It's a good form, I think. And then you can come for the programs. You can chant Hare Krishna with us. You know, our programs, you can say, starts at 4:30. You can say 7 o'clock it come. We sing and dance together. Positions similar to yours, also as you're similar to what you're describing, but slowly we've been able to give up that and get happiness also without sex life and experience intimacy. And that is a position of real happiness.
That is.
In fact, Krishna says in the Bhagavatam, he says misery. This is an amazing point Krishna says. He says misery means to be implicated in searching after sex life. He says that is real misery. He says that in Uddhava Gita. To be implicated in searching after sex life is misery. So if we stop that, then you become happy. Anyone can attest for happiness by stopping that business? Huh? How many of us can attest for happiness by pursuing that? Don't answer that. So it is possible. It is just a matter of keeping yourself in good sangha. If you don't understand anything I've said, really, truly, then at least understand you should keep yourself in good association. You understand that point?
Yes.
Good people, you keep yourself in their association, then you'll be able to cross over mountains.
Okay. All right, thank you. Thank you, Krishna.
All right, Krishna. Okay, we're going to finish there. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya. Thank you.